the words through his mouth.
To jump backward off the waterfall?
Lou's stiffness released with a single shift of her head.
What did you say?
Ben smiled.
To jump backward off the waterfall.
Her breath quickened.
He didn't jump.
Another smile, stronger, gaining traction.
No. You pushed him.
Only she and Vex had been on the cliff that night.
Not even Nayeli had seen.
Vex trusted Ben.
As though easing to the edge of that cliff, Lou said, All right, Ben, what is your proposition?
My father wants me to find a way to make magic permanent.
Lou knew this already. Vex had told her.
You want to do that?
She asked. But Ben shook his head, then stopped and squinted.
I want to cure the world of my father. He gave people shaking sickness. I mean to show everyone that I can cure it and that he can't, and neither can the church.
Lou looked away at the equipment spread over Ben's table.
Have you?
What?
Have you figured out a way to make magic permanent?
That isn't what I want to do.
Ben pressed.
I want to cure shaking sickness. You know what the cure is. If you help me, we can.
Lou's face went hard, emotionless, her body responding in kind.
Whatever good deed you think will change anything, you're wrong. This is war.
She hadn't said that aloud yet. Not in the machinations, the search for Milo, not in the prejudice and threats toward raiders, not even when Eleazar had been on this ship. On Grace Lorraine's shore. There had to be a peaceful solution. We sacrificed too much for peace. But she knew now. There had been no sacrifice. The war had never ended. She had been a fool in so many ways. Lou let go of her collected, demure politician demeanor. She let herself once again become the girl of blood and secrets, who had spent her childhood listening to her parents plan battles and discuss death over breakfast.
If you want to stop Eleazar, she started, you'll need to do more than discredit him by healing the people he's hurt. He wants permanent magic so he can have an unstoppable army of defensors. But how will he convince his devout soldiers to accept, let alone ingest, magic?
She suspected what Eleazar would do, but she waited for Ben's answer. He stared at the floor in thought.
He'll say it came from the pious god. He'll say it wasn't botanical magic, but blessings for those of purity.
Lou nodded. When she was younger, she had left these sorts of plans to her parents, relaxing in the knowledge that the burden went to someone else. But she had heard enough of their plots and listened in on so many of their meetings. She could do this. Her father had made her very capable. And Kari? Had she known the truth? Lou couldn't bring herself to wonder. There was no solace in knowing, no help in the answer. All she needed right now was to plan, to be a child of the revolution. She smiled, though it made her feel hollow.
We'll make potions. We'll take power sage and make strength permanent. We'll take aerated blossom and make flight last longer than one breath.
Eleazar won't be able to claim permanent magic is a gift from the pious god.
Not if we make permanent magic first and tell everyone that it came from Grace Lorraine's botanical plants.
Ben's face drained of color. He looked behind her at Gunnar, and his hesitation made Lou lean forward.
You can, can't you? She asked. You can make all magic permanent.
Ben shook his head.
No, but between the three of us, we can figure it out.
Gunnar stayed quiet. His silence waited. Lou didn't care. She was beyond reason. She was utterly broken.
Then I'll help you, Ben,
she said.
I'll help you destroy your father.
And mine, too. Defensors escorted Lou out later, leaving Ben alone with Gunnar and the book that had turned up in Lou's things. The book the church had burned for the same reason they had burned Rodrigo. Heresy. Ben had agreed to escape this ship with Lou and Vex. To go somewhere safe. Lou had described a stream raider haven in a port north of here. With them, help Lou make permanent magic and reveal it to the world before Eleazar could claim it as a gift of the pious god. Relief surged through Ben's veins with a momentum he hadn't expected. It plowed into his worry, 6 years of holding himself in perfect check, and cracked apart the armor he had built of obedience and piety and carefully selected sins. He had agreed to irrevocably turn on his father. No more hiding, no more lying, no more holding his breath waiting to be discovered. Paxman was alive, and Ben was well on his way to being free. The lantern didn't light every corner of the room. Darkness sheathed Gunner near his cot. Ben stayed where he'd been throughout the conversation with Lou, on the edge of the table, ankles crossed. He lifted his eyes to Gunner.
You have nothing to say?
Gunner didn't move. Not a shift of his shoulders, not a flex of his jaw.
You have me here to keep you from getting too close,
Gunner said.
Yes. Stop, Benje. Don't do this with her.
Benje, Ben parroted in his head. Ben peeled his eyes away from Gunner. They had spent almost 2 weeks on this ship, with Gunner watching his every move and making unexplained suggestions to keep Ben from figuring out how to make magic permanent. 2 weeks. And Ben had given himself that time, expecting some great revelation to occur to him. One that would make everything right. But this. Making magic permanent with Lou and revealing it before Eleazar could take credit for it was the only thing that might effect change. His plan of curing shaking sickness had felt weak even to him. Something like that wouldn't be enough to change an entire country's beliefs and stop a war.
This is different, Ben told Gunner. This will stop my father. Your people use magic like this all the time.
Yes,
Gunner cut in.
That magic is still burning the Mechtlans.
Ben winced.
I'm sorry. We can use it to help your people too. If they had...
Gunner sighed.
No, Benje.
He moved into the light. His expression of severity sent a chill over Ben's body.
You have a good heart, I see now. But you are making a weapon. Only death will follow.
Once Ben left, Vex fully expected defensors to kill him, despite Eleazar agreeing to let him live. That agreement had been a lie for Ben's sake. Eleazar wanted his nephew dead. Vex had known that since the courtroom in New Deza, when he'd seen the Argridian diplomats. He'd felt it, deep in his soul. Argridian pawns of Eleazar's leading a charge for Vex's death at the hands of the Council? Way too convenient to not be intentional. And not surprising, either. But Vex hadn't been afraid until now. Until he was here, trapped under his uncle again. He wouldn't escape Eleazar twice, and knowing that brought him close to passing out. But defensors only came to move Vex to what was more or less a closet on the middle deck. They put Lou back in the original cell, he guessed. They'd keep them split up to use as leverage against each other and drive them crazy with uncertainty. Damned if it wouldn't work. Vex forced himself to sit on the floor of the cramped closet. Only a sliver of light peeked under the doorframe. He could hear defensors breathing outside, but otherwise silence. Ben didn't believe in Eleazar. 6 years of Vex telling himself he was an idiot for writing letters to someone who existed only in his memory. 6 years of moving on with his life because he couldn't expect Ben to turn on Eleazar. If Ben had risen against his father, Eleazar would have killed him. Vex leaned his head against the wall and smiled up at the blackness. For the first time in years, he let himself remember what it had been like. To hope that Argrid would get better. He remembered his father spinning stories of tolerance, encouragement, and growth, and how Vex had pictured it happening. He and Ben standing side by side. He'd killed that dream the day his father had burned. But now, Eleazar still had endless power. And Ben had power too. Maybe Vex would survive this. Maybe every piece of who he had once been wasn't dead. 33. Defensors didn't come for Lou the first day, nor the second. They brought her food and water and left her to stew alone in the cell, where she imagined what scenarios might be playing out beyond the ship. Nayeli had figured out something had gone amiss. Where was she now? What had she told Teo? They had not made a plan for this scenario, should Vex and Lou not return. Perhaps Vex had his own arrangement with his crew for such an event. But Kansu was on her way and bent for war, no doubt. Had the Argridians captured Etta on the Mecht crew as well? Her crewmates had no reason to suspect her. Surely a rescue was coming. Did the Council know of Argrid's presence off Grace Luray? Or had the Argridian diplomats and their allies concealed that information? What of the Council members who opposed Argrid? Were they still under house arrest? Or worse, who was against Argrid, and who else, like Tom, was an Argridian agent? Lou wanted to rip the planks of the cell apart for some way to expel the pressure in her chest. She pictured her mother's face, relived everything Kari had said or done or hinted at, looking for holes, comparing it to Tom's deceit. She pictured Brandon, the loyal captain of the castle guard. She pictured Annalisa's mother, Bianca, who claimed she had fled Argrid but died of the disease that Eleazar was giving to people, some of whom he let remember. She pictured Annalisa, young, innocent. How deep did the deception run? Lou! A voice yanked her from sleep. Cold sweat washed over her, her body awakening somewhere unsafe before her mind could remember why. Time was impossible to determine in the belly of the ship, but Lou blinked through her fog, noting the absence of any breakfast tray. Not yet morning. Her eyes landed on the person outside her cell, expecting it to be a guard or Ben, but she dove forward with a startled sob.
Nayeli!
Nayeli beamed. She wore black, head to toe, her dark hair knotted against her scalp. Her hands wriggled in fingerless gloves, fast at work picking at the pouches strapped across her waist. But her attention was on Lou, her eyes round and happy.
I gotta say, Lou, in the short time I've known you, you've ended up in a lot of cells.
Nayeli withdrew whatever plant she'd been searching for. Lou eyed it, amusement warring with disbelief.
No, said Lou.
Yes,
giggled Nayeli. Footsteps pattered down the stairs. Lou gripped the bars, rigid, until one more person came into view. Etta.
Where's Vex?
Etta asked, eyeing the other empty cells.
How are you here? Where's Teo?
Teo's far away, under guard with Kansu's raiders. This ship had an early morning shift change. Two defensors are unconscious. One more... can hopefully swim.
Etta paced up and down the hall like she was the one caged.
Hurry up, Nay. We don't have long before this goes to shit.
Nayeli made a sharp croak of achievement and lit the plants in her palms.
Back up, Lou. Nayeli, Lou tried again. You can't.
Etta saw the plant.
Stop, I can get the keys.
Oops, too late.
Nayeli sang and threw the plant at the cell door. It wasn't hemlight, which she had used to free Lou and Vex from the Mechts. This was the far more dangerous, far more destructive, variegated holly. All the things Ben had planned with Lou. Fleeing to safety in a raider syndicate, making permanent magic before Eleazar did, hinged on Ben's singular task of getting himself, Lou, and Paxman off the ship. Doing so had proven problematic. No one from the Astuto ventured to the shore, despite how close they were. Supply runs, when needed, transferred goods from the shore to Eleazar's ship to Ben's, but never did a boat go from the Astuto to the island. Intentional. The prisoners were aboard the Astuto. Having a predictable escape route would be stupid. When he sent a letter via Yakis to Eleazar, Ben found that even he was not allowed to go ashore.
"I request a solid workspace free of the ship's damp and constraints," Ben had written. "It is not yet time. Finish your work, at least one permanent potion, and we may proceed. Have you broken the girl yet?"
Eleazar had responded. Ben crumpled the letter, feeling the distrust in his father's words. His cover was precarious. One wrong move, and Eleazar could cry "Heretic Prince" and restrain him as a true prisoner. 3 mornings after Paxman's arrival, Ben bolted upright, dreams of plants and fire scattering in the wake of a noise that didn't make sense. His back screamed in agony from where he'd fallen asleep over his table. Botanical wonders of the Grace Luray colony serving as a horrible makeshift pillow. He rubbed out a kink in his neck, noting first the low light of dawn, then Gunner standing, the muscles across his bare chest strained with tension, the thin blanket from his cot pooled around his feet.
"What?"
Ben stared at Gunner's clan mark. From this view, it looked like a sunburst, rays curling across his sternum and into the top ripples of his abdominal muscles.
"Unchain me,"
Gunner demanded.
"Now."
Ben shook his head to clear it. He'd heard a pop, only louder. An explosion from the lowest deck. Ben flew to his feet, yanking the keys out of his pocket.
"They're keeping Paxman in a storage room down this hall," Ben said as he bent to Gunner's chain. "We have to get him. If something's wrong, he'll be the first target to blame."
"It came from below. Lou?"
Gunner bounced in anticipation, stretching his fingers.
"I said you should talk to her again. She planned her own escape. We don't know that."
Ben looked up. The intensity of Gunner's heat held Ben immobile, like pyre flames drawing him in and sunbeams stroking his face. They hadn't been this close since the holding cells of Grace Neos Cathedral, when Gunner had been the one on his knees, his chin in Ben's hand. Gunner dropped his head, tangles of blonde hair brushing the top of his clan mark. He shot Ben a look of annoyance.
"Have you finished? Princes do not know how locks work."
The lock came free with a click, and Ben stood, returning Gunner's annoyed look with one of his own. But he felt the flimsiness of it. Above, a bell tolled, feet pounded, the ship awakening amidst a volley of gunfire. Whatever was happening, they needed to use it, as they had used everything else.
"We fight now,"
Gunner said. He waited for confirmation, but Ben knew that if he said no, Gunner would shove him down and storm out of the room, an unstoppable fireball. Already the temperature around him had spiked, drawing sweat along Ben's forehead. Gunner didn't seem worried that he was wearing only the pants of his servant's uniform. He extended his hand and birthed a flame in his palm. The orange light flared in his eyes, their color the blue of a sky at storm.
"Yes,"
Ben said, wanting to retch, wanting to scream.
"We fight."
Gunner smiled. The first time he had given Ben something other than a glower, and it was as incapacitating as his heat.
"Finally,"
Gunner said, and sent fire blasting at the door. Lou dove into the corner of her cell as the lit variegated holly hit the bars. A dome-shaped explosion erupted, brilliant white light flaring in a blast that rang in Lou's ears. Debris sprayed across her, bits of metal and chunks of wood, but thankfully, no seawater.
"You could have killed us,"
Lou shouted, her ears buzzing. She clawed her way to her feet, analyzing the mess that had once been her cell door. A gaping, smoking hole now, it was littered with pieces of itself, and larger chunks of iron had embedded in the seaside wall. Naeli didn't acknowledge any of these dangers. In fact, she was giggling. Etta flew up from where the explosion had thrown her.
"Nay, you dumbass!"
Naeli waved her hands at her ears. "Can't hear you! Explosion was too loud!" Etta glared at her as she hobbled over to the hole in the cell.
"Where's Vex?"
The realization settled. They might have had the secrecy to find him if Naeli had not quite literally blown it away.
But as Lou started to yell at her again, bedlam carried. Voices raised in orders, warning. An alarm bell tolled in the rapid pattern of a call. Lou's eyes went to the ceiling, hearing the expected footsteps thundering down to investigate the explosion. But beyond that, another noise came. Faint yet distinct.
Gunfire?
Relief washed over her.
Kansu!
Naeli cheered, but they had no time for further explanation. They shot up the first set of stairs, sidestepping the two unconscious defensors Etta had mentioned, and made for another staircase that would lift them to the middle deck. The closer they got to the main deck, the more mayhem would reign. Lou jolted to a stop as shouting intensified, words she could make out now.
Port side! Coming around the stern! More approaching from the shore!
Does Kansu have enough raiders? Lou asked.
But would any number of steamboats make a difference against Argridian brigantines and galleons? Kansu's syndicate was the only group on this island fighting Argrid. They couldn't afford to lose anyone in battle. Naeli shrugged.
Not taking on, distracting.
Which is why we have to move, Etta said. Kansu won't be able to hold on for long, and we don't have Vex.
Lou shook away the parts of her that wanted to sort through the larger goings-on in favor of their imminent survival. Ben would know where they were holding Vex. And they couldn't leave without Ben, too. Lou needed him if she was to have any hope of stopping Eleazar.
The laboratory, she said. This way.
Lou shot up the staircase, intending to veer left down the next deck. The defensors who had come to investigate the explosion barred her way. But what stopped Lou cold, her feet on the edge of the stairwell's hatch, was the man who led them. Milo pointed a pistol at her.
34. Above, the fighting intensified. Gunfire came alongside shouting, and in the distant parts of the ship, Lou heard the clank of metal rotating, readying. Cannons. Lou put her hands out, feeling her own lack of weapons as Milo aimed his pistol at her. Behind her, Naeli and Etta filled the hall, sighted by pistols in the hands of the defensors backing up Milo.
It's over,
Lou forced herself to say.
The raiders attacking will take you back to New Diza, and the council will stop Argrid. It's over.
A bluff. She had no idea how this would end, nor how many of Kansu's raiders there were, nor how many defensors the Argridians had to counter. But that was how it would play out, ideally. Kansu would take at least this ship, and they would drag Milo back to New Diza with a full account of his wrongdoings and the Argridian king's plans. Lou knew it was a brittle dream. They would be lucky to get off this ship alive. Milo sneered.
Oh, Miss Andrew,
he chided, the voice he'd used when his men had captured her so many years ago, speaking to someone too stupid to comprehend basic sense.
This island is Argrid's.
Once, Lou might have corrected him. The island belongs to its people. Yes, Grace Luray did belong to its people. The ones who had fought for it as Lou had, and the ones who enjoyed the freedom. The ones who fled here to escape their own homeland's strife, and the ones who came with stars in their eyes and hope in their hearts. This country was beautiful because of the variety of its people, and it was strong for that same reason. Knowing that renewed Lou's courage.
Let Argrid try to fight. We defeated you once. We will do so again.
Argrid controls the Mecht Raider Syndicate and therefore the southern part of the island,
Milo said.
The council has bowed to us as well, but please do tell me how you think this tantrum of one Raider Syndicate will change anything. It proves what Argrid has known all along, that this island is desperate for the pious god to cleanse it.
Vibrations rang through the ship as a succession of explosions detonated. Cannon fire. They came a breath before the door behind Milo and his men, the one leading to Ben's laboratory, blew off its hinges. Lou lurched back into Naeli. Milo's men toppled away as a roar of flames poured through the doorway, fire licking the air with searching, hungry fingers.
Through the flames stepped Gunner, his face bent to match the fire he controlled. He turned right, away from Milo's men and Lou's group, and flicked his hand at passing bundles of flames to snuff them out. Behind him, Ben braced himself on the doorframe, coughing. Half of Milo's men recovered, rushing to Ben or tearing after Gunner down the hall. Milo leaped to his feet, pistol swinging to Lou again, though he shouted over his shoulder,
"My prince, are you harmed?"
"No,"
Ben hacked.
"My assistant was defending me. We heard the attack. Stand down."
Milo faltered, his pistol lowering.
"What?"
Fire flared again, and three of Milo's defensors screamed at the end of the hall. A thud, a shout, and Gunner stomped back through the building's smoke. Only two of Milo's men remained, divided between Ben's call to stand down and Milo's posture of attack. But Lou saw who was behind Gunner, a shadow in the smoke, and she moved. She threw her body into Milo, knocking his hand into the wall. The pistol clattered from his grip, and she swiped it up, kicking out his legs and sending him to the floor. Naeli threw Hemlight at one of the remaining defensors, while Edda elbowed the other in the face. They went down, taken out long enough for Lou to press on for the stairs, her pistol leading the way up to the main deck. Dawn cast a flushed net over the golden blue sky, a too gentle backdrop. Commanders shouted to reload, aim, fire. Defensors cried, "Huzzah!" when cannons struck targets, or "Duck!" when Kansu's raiders fired projectiles. The rock outcropping that the galleon had docked next to rose as high as its starboard railing, leaving the top of the deck and masts unobstructed for attacks from both sides. Kansu's steamboats peppered the water between the Argridian armada and the shore of Grace Luray, dots amid rolling waves of blue. Two of the brigantines had gathered around Eleazar's ship, but Kansu's steamboats didn't focus there. They skirted the jagged rocks for hiding spots around Ben's ship. Against the size of the galleons and the lethal precision of the brigantines, it would not be a battle. It would be a slaughter. As this war would be, if Eleazar got his permanent magic and no one on Grace Luray united to stop him. Lou paused, gun limp, near the central hatch. Naeli came up on her right, her fingers fluttering around bundles of hemlight and variegated holly. Edda filled in on Naeli's other side and had drawn knives. Gunner, Ben, and Vex joined them. Gunner already holding balls of fire in his palms, Ben with a drawn sword, and Vex with a smile and a wink as if those were weapons enough. Defensors began to notice them as Milo burst through the central hatch with his battered and burned men. They gave Lou's group a wide berth, not bothering with intimidation now that they had the upper hand. Milo wiped blood from a trickle down his chin and sneered at her. She needed another play. Something to give them one last boost against the Argridians training dozens of weapons on them. Tension wound around Vex and his group like a net yanking them to the surface. It'd break at any moment, a stray bullet, a battle-blind defensor eager to protect his prince. Ben spun to him.
"Take me hostage,"
he hissed. Vex gave him a dumbfounded look.
"What?"
Lou heard, too. She looked beyond him at the defensors holding their positions.
"They don't know you've turned," she whispered.
With no more than that, she smashed Ben's back to her chest. He'd been holding a sword, but it dropped as Lou jammed the barrel of her pistol to his temple. Well, this was not a situation Vex had expected. The defensors had, though. They looked more murderous now that one of the prisoners had outright threatened their prince.
"Lower your weapons!" Lou shouted. "Move to the starboard railing!"
The railing that the ship had docked along the rocks. The port side would be free. Shit. They'd have to jump overboard to escape. The defensors didn't move. A rifle cocked, the click like thunder.
"Now!"
Lou shouted, pressing the pistol a little too convincingly to Ben's head.
"Do it!"
Ben ordered, wincing. The defensors obeyed, lowering their weapons and moving. One man, though, watched Ben with a heavier weight than the rest of the soldiers, like he'd already planned something. Lou twisted, pulling Ben backward across the deck. Their group reached the railing opposite the defensors, and Vex snuck a peek overboard. The water was empty, but he'd bet his life that a boat was hiding behind one of the nearby rocks, watching for them. It might well be his life that he'd have to bet, too, free falling off a ship like they were about to do. Vex swallowed.
"We swim?"
someone asked. The big mech'd.
"Don't worry," Vex countered. "There's a boat."
"There is no boat. Trust me, it's there."
The mech'd growled.
"There is no boat."
"Looks like you're not the only one afraid of heights," Naeli said.
She hopped onto the railing and leaped into the abyss beyond the ship with no hesitation, sinking elegantly into the crashing waves. Vex's throat closed, but she surfaced and started for the nearest rock. Sure enough, a steamboat listed out of the shadows, Kansu at the bow, a pistol in each hand. Etta waved for Vex to go next. Lou would have to be last to hold Ben as collateral for as long as possible. Every other fear scattered, and Vex reached for Lou.
"Lou, give me the gun. Let me..."
Lou turned to him for 1 second. One goddamn second, and Vex's panic rushed through his body before he knew why. Yakis moved. He dove across the deck, drawing his sword, swinging wide. Lou shoved Ben to his knees to protect him from the blade's swing and so she could falter back. Ben didn't realize what he'd done until the steel of his sword rang where he caught Yakis's blow. His heart hammered, crushing into his ribs. Behind him, the remaining members of his group didn't move, the whole of the deck caught in the crash of his and Yakis's blades. Yakis's face went wide with shock.
"Ben,"
he started.
"Jump!"
Ben hurled himself forward, catching Yakis off guard enough that he stumbled back. The defensors on the starboard deck reacted, racing forward to resume battle. Cries ripped from throats, boots pounded on the wooden planks, and all Ben could do was hope that the rest of his group had heeded his call and jumped off the deck to safety. The answer came in a blast of heat. Gunner. A wall of fire washed a handful of defensors backward with screeches of agony, and Ben used the distraction to heft his sword and counter the swing of an approaching attacker. He'd destroyed any chance he had of pretending not to be the heretic prince. However this battle ended, his world would not be the same. Lou braced herself on the railing, gun at her hip, Etta tugging on her other arm. Below, waves thrashed Kansu's boat as Naeli beckoned from the deck. She needed to jump. Ben's sacrifice would only give them a short delay. Next to her, Vex watched Ben, his face grim. If they left, Ben would be condemned for helping them. More than that, if Lou left this ship without him, this war would swallow her up. Lou's consciousness tore away from the chaos. She saw Etta dive in front of her, back to back with Vex as they fought off defensors. She saw Milo across the deck, shoving defensors out of his path, his sword drawn and his eyes on her. A Tunkian steamboat fired a ball of variegated holly, close enough to make all on deck duck. It bounced off one of the masts with a rocking explosion, leaving the mast teetering, not taken out. Lou grabbed Etta in the paws.
"Get Vex off this ship," she told her.
Begged her. Etta met her eyes, but Lou moved, shoving Etta toward the railing. She gave them cover with a shot from her pistol. The defensors dropped back, created room, and Lou wanted to look at Vex. But she couldn't. Not now. She had the cure for shaking sickness, a way to protect them as they experimented with Grace Lorraine's botanical magic. Ben had the start of permanent magic. He'd figured out on his own that making concentrated magic increased its potency. Together, and with Gunner's begrudging help, they would find a way to make magic permanent. Power Sage for muscular strength, Bright Mint for mental function, healing, speed, defense, everything. Like Eleazar wanted. But they would use it to escape and show the island, the world, that they had no need of the church or Argrid.
They had no need to fear any attacker, for they had the defense, and they could build a world on their own strength. With that arrangement, Lu had secured her own future as well. To do this, to save her island, she would become as transparent as Grace Luray had come to be. Only its truth remained, the fact of what it was, an island of outlaws, of raiders, of sinners. Of Grace Lorayans in as many sizes and shapes as there were plants in their rivers. But Lu needed Ben to create the permanent magic. And, selfishly, she needed Ben to find the cure for Vex. He would know or be able to determine the plants used by the church, the ones Vex couldn't remember even with help. The little girl in Lu, the one who had wanted so badly to help the revolution, cried out at the chance of still being able to help her island. She could make up for what she had done. She owed Grace Luray that. She owed it everything. Lu spotted Ben in the fray, two men deep. Gunner neared him, igniting defensors, swinging punches and throwing kicks.
Go, Ella!
Lu screamed, twisting back once.
Get him off this ship!
Vex heard her. Edda, loyal, determined Edda, grabbed him and heaved him back, but Vex dropped his heels into the wood.
Stop! Lu!
Nothing else mattered until the Argridians could no longer use Vex against her. Until every member of his crew was off this ship and safe. Lu ignored Vex's cries and searched again for Ben, rotating the now empty pistol to use as a club. She would take down the defensors nearest Ben with Gunner's help and haul him out as Edda hauled Vex, and they could leap off together. Fire shot through her middle, stabbing from her belly to her spine. Lu's jaw dropped open as her mind scrambled for a sensible solution. Had Gunner burned her? But she blinked, focused, breathed. Milo threaded his arm around her back, holding her as if in a waltz, while the orchestra played rifles firing and cannons blasting and men dying.
I would rather see you dead than escape me again, he whispered, pressing his lips to her ear.
The motion twisted the sword in her belly, gouging deeper, but pain didn't come. She had felt this numbness before, spreading out from a single point, immobilizing one limb, then another. Lazenate. Milo had tipped his sword with Lazenate. All the horrible things Lu had done came back to her, demanding recompense here, now. She let free one foolish whimper, and Milo held her closer.
Shh, he purred. You didn't weep as a child. Tears don't become you.
Lu!
Vex shouted, but she couldn't turn, couldn't see. Milo slid out the blade and released her. Lu dropped, the Lazenade's numbness cresting over her. She told herself she should be writhing. She should feel something.
Adeluna!
Vex screamed. As she hit the deck and Ben dove for her, lifting her head in the crook of his elbow, she saw Vex by the railing. Edda held him back, and the panic on his face was so potent Lu almost rescinded her order.
No, let him stay, please. Don't leave me.
Edda, her face a mask of agony, hefted Vex overboard as she jumped. Defensors flung themselves at the railing, firing after them into the ocean. Lu felt his absence through the Lazenade. She felt the ache of watching Vex leave her on the deck of this ship, knowing that that was the last time she would see him, and that he would die now too. She wouldn't be able to save him. Lu whimpered again, and the ship rocked. Or no, it was her vision spiraling and fading. The world melted into colors, the blue of the sky, the orange of Gunner's protective fire blasts, and red somewhere. On Ben, her blood squishing through his fingers.
We need her!
Ben shouted.
We need her!
Fainter. Farther. A rush of images. A flutter of sound. And then, a void. This is Kate Rudd.
We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of These Rebel Waves by Sarah Rash, presented by Balzer and Bray and Harper Audio. This program was produced by Elgin Productions. Executive producer, Caitlin Gehring. Text copyright 2018 by Sarah Rash. Production copyright 2018 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.